Hi, and welcome to the first ever Intrepid Christianity podcast. My name is Josh Mitchell. It's Good Friday, which means we're at the beginning of the Easter weekend for this year, and that seemed as good a time as any to actually launch podcast and the Intrepid Christianity name. Now, I say launch. A lot of people who've known me for a while will have heard the term being used. The concept of Intrepid Christianity is something that God's placed on my heart for a number of years now, probably going right back almost to when I recommitted my life to Christ back in the August of 2010. The vision itself has been through a number of different iterations. At one stage, I was looking at creating a print magazine. Then there was a website before we reached the place where we're at now of doing this podcast. That means, of course, there'll still be also a website, social media, etc., but we can worry about that tangent a bit later. The concept itself of Intrepid Christianity is one of embracing the adventure of the life that God's calling you to. That idea of adventure, I think, is a really great word for our walk with God. There's this sense of anticipation that comes with it. There's a sense of going out into the unknown, yet being confident that you're not actually going to come to harm, even though you know that there's some risk involved. When we think of the term intrepid, we think of adventurers. We think of this idea of fearlessness, of resilience, of fortitude, and the will to keep going even when things get tough. These are all ideas and thoughts that I'm absolutely confident will help each and every one of us on our journey with God as we walk into the plans that He has for each of us. But more on that as we continue the journey. Today, as Easter is upon us for 2021, I want to reflect on a particular aspect of the Easter narrative. I won't say it gets overlooked, because I'm sure that there's plenty of time that it's talked about, but I do feel like it maybe gets a little less focused, kind of gets just brushed over a little bit when we sort of think of the broader narrative of the Easter story. And that's the Garden of Gethsemane. We tend to hear a lot about the Lord's Supper, Jesus' final meals with his disciples, and that's fair enough. It instituted one of the very few rituals that Jesus actually told us we should keep as part of our worship. We then also tend to spend a lot of time, for obvious reasons, focused on Jesus' arrest, his trials, and of course the crucifixion and resurrection. And all of this is, of course, so important. I think as a broad narrative, the Easter story is probably one of, if not the most important narrative that we should be familiar with as Christians. But between the Lord's Supper and when Jesus gets arrested, there's this handful of verses where Jesus goes out of the city with his disciples to pray. The story itself is told in one way or another across all four Gospels. I'm going to read Matthew's account. Then Jesus went with them to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." And taking with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, "My soul is very sorrowful, even to death. Remain here and watch with me." And going a little farther, he fell on his face and prayed, saying, "My Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will." And he came to the disciples and found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, "So could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." Again for the second time he went away and prayed, "My Father, if this cannot pass unless I drink it, your will be done." And again he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were heavy. So leaving them again, he went away and prayed for the third time, saying the same words again. Then he came to the disciples and said to them, "Sleep and take your rest later on. See, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand." Now this is all happening right after Jesus has shared his last meal with his disciples, the Passover, which was really the first event designated as part of Israel's religious traditions when they escaped from Egypt. Which is interesting when we think about the fact that this is also when Jesus instituted the Lord's Supper, or what we now call communion, took some bread, some wine, and he used them as symbols of his own body about to be broken, his own blood about to be shed. In doing this, Jesus instituted the new covenant, the one that Christians adhere to today. So in Jewish tradition, the Passover signified salvation against death through the blood of a sacrificial lamb. And as Jesus passed the wine around, it was symbolic of his own blood. He announced that he now was the lamb and that salvation is available through him. Now, when you think about it, there must have been a fairly strong sense of foreboding as they went through all of this. As you read the tale of the Last Supper, Jesus wasn't exactly subtle about what was to come. He said straight out to the whole group that one of them was going to betray him. He had also just told them that this was the last time he would eat and drink with them, and that they'd all be scattered tonight. Much to the disciples' chagrin and opposition, of course. But Jesus leaves the city and comes to the Garden of Gethsemane, located at the foot of the Mount of Olives. It's probably a little surprise to discover that Gethsemane itself translates as oil press. And wasn't Jesus pressed on this night? He languishes in the garden for what seems to be at least a couple of hours. In Luke's account of his narrative, Jesus sweats drops of blood. Medically speaking, this is known as a condition called hematidrosis, and it's linked to extreme levels of physical or emotional stress. Basically, the body's fight or flight mode going into overdrive, and gives us a really good idea that Jesus wasn't, at this moment in time, Jesus wasn't completely okay with going ahead with what he knew was coming next. Now, I remember the first time that this really struck me. It was in year 11, school production that year was going to be Jesus Christ Superstar. While I was well backed for the role of Herod and had a complete ball singing his song, I remember hearing the raw emotion that hits with the song Gethsemane in that production. And it really struck me at that time that this was a real person. I think sometimes as Christians, it's possible to read the Bible and because of the reverence with which we treat it, after all, it is scripture. But because of that, it's possible to overlook some of the reality of the text. I mean, I'd grown up in a Christian home, been educated at a Christian school. I knew the Bible pretty well for a 16-year-old kid at the time. And I'd heard or read this passage across each of the gospel stories at least a few times throughout my life. Even with all of that, though, the mental imagery that I had was those medieval type paintings or your lead light stained glass windows. That image of Jesus where he's got the halo of gold around his head. He looks patient and serene, staring faithfully up at the heavens with his arms open by his sides. This meek, patient, unblemished man. It certainly wasn't an image of a man lying prostrate on the ground, beating the earth with his fists. His face scrunched up in agony as drops of blood squeezed through the pores on his head, tears streaking his face as he begged for his life. But that's literally what Jesus was doing here. He was standing there crying out to God, begging for his life. In this moment, in the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus did not want to die. I want to say that again. Jesus did not want to die. He pleaded with God, asking, is there any other way that we can do this? But he also knew that ultimately it was still God's plan that came first. Even as he begged for his life, he finished with, nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. And this is the first thing that really stands out to me in this passage. Even Jesus, who was God incarnate, the Word made flesh, had his moment of doubt. I don't think we give this moment in Jesus' life enough credit to acknowledge that he really was human. In that moment, in the garden, he was scared. In that moment, he was uncertain. In that moment, he must have at least entertained the idea of running. He knew what was coming. He knew Judas was on his way. And I'm sure that he also knew that if he were to get up and walk away right now, he could quite easily disappear into the night, probably go off and live a fairly pleasant life. But he also knew that he was God. And ultimately, it still came back to, not as I will, but as you will. This is part of the reason why I wanted to launch this podcast and the broader idea of intrepid Christianity this weekend, and with this particular passage. I did mention earlier that God's been challenging me on this ministry for a number of years now, and I've kind of avoided it for a lot of that time. Offered token obedience here and there. I've got files on my computer for magazine covers that I had designed, blogs that I'd written, different bits and pieces that have shown that I've been at least aware of the idea for a while. But any time that it's really come to like the rubber hitting the road, sort of just gone, nah, not into this. And I just pushed it back to the side, because sometimes what God's calling us to do is scary. In fact, I'd probably argue that most of the time what God asks us to do is something scary. Have you ever felt God maybe pointing towards someone going, hey, I want you to go and pray for them? Or perhaps seen someone on the street and felt a pull to walk over and give them $50? Now, I use those as examples because they're both things that I have had God pull me towards. And it's terrifying. But it's also okay to feel that way. It's okay to feel uncertainty about these things. It's even okay to actually ask God for another alternative option. Sometimes he might even give you one. Most of the time though, as strange as it may seem, God generally knows what he's doing. And so eventually we all come back to, not as I will, but as you will. With Intrepid Christianity, I've put off doing anything in recent times because I kept wanting to wait until I was ready, until I was in the right place, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, grammatically. And I wonder if it was possibly going to be the same for Jesus. I mean, maybe if he'd actually spent another year walking the earth, he might have reached this stage of reconciliation. He might have just gotten so sick and tired of humans that he went, you know what, I'm actually ready to do this after all. But it wasn't about his readiness. It was about God's will. That's not to say that you only get one opportunity to get on the ride. Far from that. If that were the case, then I wouldn't be sitting here recording this right now, and you wouldn't be listening to me at some point in the future. But that doesn't mean I feel ready. If I'm honest with you, this is a really scary endeavor. But I'm stepping into it, and it's only something that I'm doing because of submission to God. And because I've come to understand it's okay to be scared. It's okay to doubt. But if God's calling you to something and you know that he's the one calling you, then eventually something has to give. And ideally, that would be this moment of acknowledging, not as I will, but as you will. The second thing that I really want to draw out of this is to never underestimate the power of prayer. Again, I'm going to be brutally honest here and say that I'm not the best prayer. I mean, yes, I talk to God for sure, but when I watch a movie like War Room, or I talk to people and hear about people who they get up each morning and spend like an hour in prayer, I'm just amazed by these people. Seriously, if I close my eyes for that long, you can guarantee I'm going to be sitting along Jesus' disciples fast asleep, heavy eyes. Although, not that eyes closed is necessarily required for prayer. Jesus did say specifically to Peter, watch and pray that you may not enter into temptation. So generally the action of watching requires a little bit of eyes openness. But just want to use that and then come back a step. Back to the foreboding that must have been on everyone's minds after they finished eating. We aren't in a situation here where the disciples were sitting around a campfire singing Kumbaya. Jesus had spent the entire evening telling them that this was effectively the last night they would ever have together. He told them they'd be scattered by night's end. And even though they all argued the point, they must have at least all had some sense of discomfort. So the fact that these guys fell asleep kind of disappointing. You know what? Look at what Jesus says. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. He then goes off and prays again, but he says something different this time. My Father, if this cannot pass unless I drink it, your will be done. As Jesus comes back and sees the state his disciples have fallen into, there's almost like this moment of recognition. It's almost like his statement, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak, is said not only to Peter, but to himself as well. When he goes back to praying, there's a resignation there, a sense of surrender. If this cannot pass unless I drink it, your will be done. We need to remember that Jesus knew what was coming. I said it before, Jesus was well aware of what Judas was doing, what he had planned, and what was to come. So what was the one thing that Jesus wanted to do ahead of what was going to be the most difficult days of his life? It was to pray. He didn't want to just pray by himself. He wanted his friends praying with him. And they let him down. Jesus comes back a second time and the disciples are asleep again. I think it's at this point that Jesus really comes to understand that he's doing this alone. He doesn't seem to wake them this time. He just goes back to where he was and keeps praying, saying the same things he's already said. It's okay to pray the same thing more than once. Prayer is how Jesus prepared for his trial, his torment, and ultimately his crucifixion. So we should never, ever underestimate the power of prayer. Gethsemane is Jesus' time in these latter stages of his life. Before now, he spent his entire ministry career teaching and discipling those around him. After this, he'll spend the rest of his life being torn down, having the world turn against him. These few hours in the garden, they were Jesus' time to prepare himself. He didn't want to go through with what he knew had to come, but he still ultimately left it in God's hands. And when he had come to that point of surrender and finality, it was God's control. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. And this is what I absolutely love about this particular passage in the Bible. It humanizes Jesus in a way that nothing else, no other verse really does. We see Jesus afraid. We see him uncertain. We see him surrender. Throughout the entire scripture, Jesus is the Word incarnate. But in this moment, he's vulnerable, more so than we see anywhere else. If you're ever stressed or worried about what God's calling you to do, it might be perhaps a bit of comfort to know that Jesus stressed about things too. And I know it's really easy to make the argument that Jesus' calling was a little bit bigger in the grand scheme of things than anything you or I are going to be asked. That goes without saying. The reality is, though, that your feelings of doubt, even if they seem minuscule in comparison to what Jesus was going through, those feelings are still real and they're still valid. When you know God's talking to you, listen. If you need strength, get into prayer. And get into prayer with people around you as well. We live in a community. We live as a body. So when one of us needs strength, it should go without saying that we come to each other and surround each other with prayer. So that's it for this week's Intrepid Christianity podcast. What will hopefully be the first of many. Until next week, stay intrepid.